Good afternoon. Welcome to Father's Family Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Father's Family Healthy Communities. I am Saquon Lawrence, director of Father's Family Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
And this is Dr. Kirk Harris, senior advisor of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities, and co-moderator with my brother Saquon Lawrence, and off location today in St. Louis, Missouri.
You got your daughter with you. Taking your daughter to school, or are you bringing her back?
Yeah, well, she's getting set up in an apartment, so, you know, I'm doing my daddy duty. I can't talk about it unless I be about it, so that's what I'm doing.
All right, well, but that's good, and that's what we promote, so... Father's Family Healthy Communities is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. Well, today is the last show on the forum. For the last 9 weeks, we've presented FFHC social marketing campaign called the New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We reimagined the role and image of black men and fathers in our ongoing work to build a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we've lifted up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we covered over the last 9 weeks and we're going to cover today, responsible fatherhood field, rites of passage in mentoring programs for black youth, effective black leadership in the role of fathers, Black Womenists, allies of FFHC, like Women in Fatherhood, effective approaches to addressing health disparities between the black community and the larger society, examples of strong black families, father's role in educating the black child in the 21st century, effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally, checking and challenging the media's image of black men and fathers, and lastly, effective workforce development and sector-driven job training activity in Chicago. So as you can tell, FFHC's New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. As we move forward as a community, let's talk about fathers as assets. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our families, community, and society. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in society and the world. What this means is that FFHC is challenging ourselves and community to dispense with debilitating talk which overemphasizes how bad our communities are, our fathers and politicians are, our leaders, our schools are, and our families, and instead promote solutions, examples of excellence and the best of what it means to be African-American and human in the world. So call us, fathers, if you want to join or if someone out there wants more information at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Again, 312-252-0460, extension 120, or visit our website at www.ffhc.org. Again, www.ffhc.org.
Can't believe those weeks have gone so fast, bro.
Yeah. And before we go any further, we want to thank our funders, the Chicago Community Trust, the Open Society Foundation, the Woods Fund of Chicago, and we want to thank also for the support of the Casey Family Foundation. We also want to thank our partners, Felix Family Services, Safer Foundation, North Lawndale Employment Network, Center for New Horizons, Metropolitan Family Services, Jane Addams Resource Corporation, Chicago Jobs Council, the City Colleges of Chicago, Chicago Housing Authority, the Illinois Department of Child Support Services, the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law, and the Cabrini-Green Legal Aid. Today, we have two guests. Donald McGee is a member of FFHC, will join us to discuss what the last 10 weeks in the New Man Project has meant to him. And on the second half of the show, we'll be talking to Haki Matabuti, founder and president of Third World Press.
Well, let me just say how glad I am to have one of the FFHC fathers here with us to join us in the forum today. I'd like to introduce everybody to Donald McGee, who is a member of FFHC, and we want to be very clear that when we engage with our fathers, they are considered members. They're not considered clients, participants, or customers, because we believe they have the power to take control of the things that they want to change in their lives. And you're not a client, participant, or customer if you're doing that. So that's why we call a member. So we'd like to just thank Donald for being on today. And we'd also like to just suggest to you and give you some understanding of the basic five activities that FFHC does engage in terms of supporting our fathers. And those activities include legal services to assist with visitation, paternity, custody issues, as well as expungement of certain categories of criminal records. So we have a very strong legal services team that is really effective in doing what they do. We also help fathers with child support services. FFHC has a strong cooperative relationship with the Illinois Department of Child Support Services, and that's very important because navigating those important issues of child support become really, really critical to ensuring that men get what they need out of the system. And also, we engage in demand-side training and job placement services. And fourth, we involve our fathers in the peer-to-peer sessions, which are extremely powerful because it gives the fathers an opportunity to engage with one another and talk about the issues that confront them. And finally, we talk about subsidized, or we support the fathers in engaging in subsidized child outings, which is critical to having the fathers engage with their children. And we just want to remind folks who are on and listening that if you would like to join FFHC, please call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120, or visit FFHC's website at www.ffhc.org. Again, www.ffhc.org. So, Donald, how are you today, my brother?
Great, great, Kurt. How you doing?
Good, good. So let's talk a little bit about how you came to FFHC. Can you give us a little insight into that?
Yes, sir. I came to FFHC just about like a year ago through Failing Family Services. I was a client there, and I was introduced through the program to Mr. Nate Parker. And,
okay.
Told us about him. We came out and see what you guys were talking about. It was real interesting what you guys had to offer, so I took a shot at it, and it just helped me accelerate it through that.
Yeah. So let me ask this question. So I know that you've been a pretty conscientious listener of the show. And so we'd like to, and you know, if you've done that a couple of weeks, a couple of times. So we'd like to ask you your impressions of the New Man Project. And, you know, how has this had impact, or how has this mattered in your life?
Well, it matters a lot. It has some very valuable and critical points to help you bring out of you. I mean, it points out some things, some avenues to show you how to interact with your children, your mother, the children's mother, and just put more value on it. Just really just show you how to bring more to the table than what you thought you knew. You just know a little more by interacting yourself, by taking, you know, you have options. Let them know you do have an option, and it shows you the ways by you guys having showing us the legal part of it, you know, how to talk to lawyers, and they can help you, you know, through the process and the job referrals, training, dog ass offer, you know, just bring, it just give you a better option than what you're not left alone, put it like that.
Right, right. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. So did you have something else to say about that? I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were completing.
No,
do you have anything? Okay, so let me ask, you know, folks haven't, I mean, one of the things that we try to do on the show is bring the face of fatherhood, black fatherhood, to the forefront. And so we want you to kind of talk about what you would like folks to know about you what would you like folks to know about black non-custodial fathers like yourself, and what you have to say specifically about yourself as a black non-custodial father, and that you can share with the audience.
Well, I would say for myself, again, letting the African-American fathers know we do have options out here for us. We other avenues we can take. But you have them options once you apply yourself. You have to apply yourself to the available resources that's provided to you. You know, you have to make yourself resourceful by going out there and get it and networking with people. When something comes about, just don't blow it off, because it might be something that more for you than you think it is. Mm. And so once you get that, you know, you have some type of firepower to work with, not ammunition towards anyone, but you're making yourself more marketable towards someone, more knowledgeable. And once you apply the knowledge, you know, you get some results, you know, okay. Put some things in process.
Great. So I know that you were a participant in the what we call our peer-to-peer rights passage yesterday. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you got out of it, and, you know, anything you'd like to share about that experience?
Well, everything that was in that process, over the course of the week, I think we did 12-week peer-to-peer.
Right.
Everything you did there, you brought it back to life. And it took you, it was like a little mini boot camp, but none strenuous or vigorous or anything like that. Just something that everything you did over that course, but you just brought it back out. You know, I can't be real specific in it because, you know.
Right.
But it's just an opportunity to give you another light, a little insight on you, yourself, your inner self.
Right.
You know,
right.
Bring your inner self out, you know, look back at you and what you can do to make yourself a better father.
Yeah, and I know, too, and one of the reasons you can't share, because there is a principle with respect to what happens there stays there, right? And
Right.
And you all were together for 8 hours?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty intense, right?
Yeah, but the time, when you take your mind off the time, don't focus on the time. It actually passed by like you're doing anything else. Mm-hmm. It just passed right by to you. And once you get into it, once you put in your mind, I'm here. You know, just open yourself up. If you open yourself up to everything else, you open yourself up to that, because that's not going to hurt you, harm you, or hinder you. It's going to help you benefit.
Right.
You know something.
I think both Saquon and I feel very much the same about you and how hard you've worked to be the father you want to be, and you know, looking for those resources to make sure that you can get to that place where you want to be. And so we just want to commend you on all your hard work, your effort, and your commitment, both to your children, working through the relationship with your children's mother, and doing what you need to do to be the father that we know you are, and you will continue to be as you move forward. So we just want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Donald. It really means a lot that you've stayed with us over these last 10 weeks, listening and calling in and now a guest on the show. So I want to thank you for that, brother.
Yeah, you've done a great job. And we know that the results of that are going to manifest very, very deeply in your children, and they will definitely benefit for that. And I think you know that, and that's kind of the object of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities, to see those children have much better outcomes because the fathers are engaged. And you're certainly an example of how that can happen. So thank you, brother. We appreciate all your efforts.
You know, we appreciate you guys for allowing us to come in, you know, not just speaking upon myself, but every guy was in there really got something out of it. And we thank you guys for bringing something like the FFAC to the table and out in the atmosphere so we can partake in it, you know. So we like to commend you guys for doing that, which hope this thing can continue to spread and other people can see the work that you guys do.
Thank you. I like it. Thank well, you. This is a love fest. I like this.
All right. Well, thanks, Donald.
Well, this good. Thank you, brother.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care, brother.
You got it.
Take care.
So, Kirk, I'm thinking before we go to break, we're going to have a small mini break and bring Hakee on. I thought perhaps we could talk a little bit about what we, you know, we attended the Gathering of Leaders Conference in Detroit last week.
Yeah.
And any impressions you want to share before we go to break?
Yeah, I do have some impressions to share. I think that's what I'm finding increasingly as, you know, we get more, we've been in this work, Saquon, you know, for 20 years. But what I'm finding is that there's an increasing energy and amongst the younger generation, if you will, those people that were like us maybe 10, 15 years ago, who are really looking to understand how to be supportive of their community and offer strength to their communities. And I'm really very encouraged by what I saw at that conference in terms of the commitment, the energy, the intellect, and just the fervor of activity that people are engaged in working around issues around Black men and boys, around fathers, around family strengthening. It's just really encouraging. And what I was also particularly encouraged about, it seems to me that there's a kind of a new paradigm, a new direction that's afoot in the foundation world, and asking different kinds of questions and providing support in a different way. And I'm seeing these glimmers of possibility in terms of, you know, making that support much more reflective of what's happening on the ground as opposed to being the flavor of the day.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged. Was there anything that stood out for you in particular?
Yeah, I think, well, the things you just mentioned, but it was also just it was a confluence of things. So, for instance, this all the buzz, you know, this weekend, I think probably in the next few weeks is this Newsweek article, right? This the cover of Newsweek talks about Black men. Mm-hmm. So there's a real national, serious national conversation, and some of our friends and colleagues are mentioned in that and contributed to that piece. Joe Jones, who was on a couple of weeks ago, and Sean Dove, our
right.
director of the Campaign for Black Male Achievement, Joshua Du Bois, I mean, your friend and colleague. That's, and then, you know, Marissa Harris Perry dedicated almost
right.
a whole show to this subject this morning. So just to kind of reiterate, I mean, it's a serious conversation. And then our next guest, you know, around 2:30, Hakee Madhubuti is going to speak to this as well, because he's also a part of this Campaign for Black Male Achievement as well. So it's just a serious conversation that's taking place around the country now. And so the conference was just a reiteration of that to me. The other thing was I participated in Congressman Bobby Rush's forum last Saturday, the day before Father's Day.
That's right. That's right.
And I really, you know, it was really interesting because I want to again, and I said this at the forum, and Hakee was on that forum with me, on the panel with me, and I want to, you know, I got to just thank him again because he really is demonstrating some strong leadership with respect to pushing back on those who are calling for an arresting 18,000 Black, which essentially going to be Black and brown youth. But anyway, so it's about 2:30. We're going to go on a mini break. I see we got Hakee on the line, and then we're gonna finish up. So let's go to break.
Okay. And we'll be back.
Non-custodial fathers, we know you may need help to become better fathers. Tune in to WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Fathers, Families, Healthy Communities Forum. Saquon Lawrence and myself, Dr. Kirk Harris, will discuss the New Man Project, which is a lifting up of what works when it comes to rebuilding the Black family.
Reimagining the role and image of Black men and fathers and working toward a successful campaign for Black male achievement. Non-custodial fathers, become a member, work with other fathers in a safe space who are committed to being in the lives of their children in positive ways. Explore what it truly means to be a man and effective ways of co-parenting with the mother of your children. Commit to engaging in demand-side job training and access to jobs. work towards establishing a cooperative relationship with child support services. Work to establish visitation and other ethical and legal arrangements to spend quality time with your children.
Fathers, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Visit our website at www.ffhc.org or listen to the show on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. WVON is now on iHeartRadio. If you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WVON wherever you are. This program is brought to you by Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities.
The talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON, Sherwin, Chicago.
Welcome back. We're pleased.
Welcome back.
We are pleased to welcome our second guest to the show this afternoon, Haki R. Matabudi, a leading poet and one of the architects of the Black Arts Movement. Haki Matabudi, publisher, editor, and educator, has been a pivotal figure in the development of a strong Black literary tradition. He has published more than 31 books, some under his former name, Don L. Lee, and is one of the world's best-selling authors of poetry and nonfiction. His Black Man, Obsolete, Single, Dangerous, The African-American Family in Transition, has sold more than 1 million copies. Professor Matabudi is a proponent of independent Black institutions. He founded Third World Press in 1967. He is also a founder of the Institute of Positive Education New Concept School, which he founded in 1969, and a co-founder of Betty Shabazz International Charter School, Barbara A. Sizemore Middle School, and DuSable Leadership Academy, all of which are in Chicago. Haki was founder and editor of Black Books Bulletin from 1970 to 1994, a key journal documenting the literature, scholarship, and conversations of African-American voices over two decades. He is the former university distinguished professor and professor of English at Chicago State University, where he founded and was director emeritus of the Gwendolyn Brooks Center and director of the Master of Fine Arts and Creative Writing Program. Professor Matabudi served as the Ida B. Wells Barnett University Professor at DePaul University for 2010 through 2011. Haki, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you brothers doing?
I'm good. Good.
Fine, Dr. Matabudi. How are you?
Oh, good. I was just listening to y'all. I think that your conversation thus far was very inspirational and right on time.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well,
thank we
you
appreciate
for,
that.
Yeah, thank you for coming in on a Sunday.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So let's get right to it. We got a lot to talk about, Haki. So the first question we have is, you wrote Black Men, Obsolete, Single, Dangerous, The African-American Family in Transition in 1990. And how has the state of African-American family changed in the last 23 years?
Let me just put that in context a little bit. I was on the faculty at Howard University between 1970 and 78, and I wrote a book titled Enemies, The Clash of Races. That's R-A-C-E-S. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of feedback from brothers in prison and asked me essentially, what should we do? All right, we can't fight the same kind of battle that you are fighting on the outside. So I began to turn my attention directly toward Black men. And as you know, Saquon, we've been doing this kind of work at the Institute of Positive Education for years before it became popular at one level.
That's right.
But I started doing serious research around the state of Black men. And then, of course, in 1990, I brought Black Men out. What happened was that here in Chicago, we had been marginalized so much. And our leadership, as far as I'm concerned, was marginalized also because very few people were really speaking out about the condition of Black men. And as you know, during the 70s, because of the policies of the nation, Black men were pushed out of the families, pushed out of the homes, in order for Black women to and Black children to receive subsidies from the federal government. So the policies of the nation helped bring the problems on the day. That's number one. Number two, the whole crack, drug, alcohol conditions in the Black community. Again, that's from the outside, you know, and as a result of that, we've seen a diminish. Now, since the book was published, what do I see today? Well, back then, we didn't have 2.5 million black and brown brothers and sisters locked up in the prison.
Right.
But at the same time, we did not have literally millions and millions of black brothers and sisters who graduated from, you know, college and university, research one and so forth, universities.
Right, right.
Back then, we were confined to certain neighborhoods that we could only live in. Now we, you know, the south side of Chicago, all the way out to Kankakee, you know, black people are there. Mm-hmm. Back then, there was a manufacturing base in the black community as well as the larger Chicago community. That does not exist today. And so what we have today is that we have a very large population of black men out of work. Our unemployment doubles that of white men, all right? And that's not only in Chicago, that's nationwide. Now, when you cannot take your girlfriend to the show, to dinner, if you cannot take your family out to a restaurant or to entertainment because you don't have a job, then you as a man, you are motivated to find money or resources wherever you can. So therefore, you have this hyper-development of the underground economy.
Mm.
The underground economy, for the most part, is illicit. That is, it's drug-based, it's illegal objects that you liberate from stores or whatever the case may be that you're selling on the streets, you're selling women on the streets, whatever the case may be. Well, you can't last out there doing that. And so what happens is, and you get caught up in the drug culture, you're arrested. You know, and I know a lot of, I knew a lot of cops during that period. You're arrested. You're put in these prisons. You got a felony. Half these brothers can't even read at a third or fourth grade level. And so that literacy level is at a level where even when you are released, you cannot join the so-called legitimate economy because you can't read, you can't write, and you got a record. So you go back into the underground economy, all right? And so I see today several problems. One, there is not a serious understanding of culture, corporate culture, black culture, you know, any kind of culture. So therefore, within the context of the black community, there is not this serious acquisition of knowledge, all right? And in order to function at a serious level in this economy or the world economy, you have to be on a road of knowledge acquisition on a daily basis, not just when you get time, not in between, you know, booty call and all this other stuff. You got to seriously be about studying. Number two, it is critical to understand the importance of women. Brothers with women, brothers with families, are always doing better without brothers without families.
Right.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That can easily be demonstrated. And I always tell, I told my sons, and they're both doing, all three doing well, I told my sons, marry women smarter than you. Which meant, essentially, they got to look for them. You see what I'm saying? You're not going to find her sitting at a damn bar stool. All right? You got to look for her. You're not going to even find it in many cases in too many of these damn churches out here. You would have to go to where education is very serious, all right? The third thing, you have to find a culture of men. You have to find a family of men who are about trying to change themselves, their families, their communities, and by extension, the world. What we have to understand, black people in Chicago, black people in Detroit, black people in Cleveland, black people in Mississippi, black people in New Orleans, we're not going anywhere. This is our country. We built this bad boy. You know, Dr. Earl Henderson has a very interesting theory, which he's working on now. He said, our first revolution was really when we fought in the Civil War. Lincoln didn't free us. We freed ourselves.
Right.
That was our first revolution.
Right.
And so we have to understand, essentially, we have got to tighten up ourselves again. We have to have a, what I call a realistic optimist view of the world. When I say realistic optimist, I mean that I know exactly how the world is functioning, and it's all against us for the most part. But therefore, if you have this realistic, we have to be optimistic about our ability to change things. And finally, any people who are in control of their own cultural imperatives are about the serious, healthy reproduction of themselves.
Right.
If you don't know, you can't do.
Right. So, you know, as you know, Haki, our forum, the New Man Project, I appreciate that.
Right.
Yeah, our forum, the New Man Project, emphasizes the strengths and aspirations of the black community.
Right.
And so from your perspective, what are the core assets of the black community?
Well, I mentioned one already. I mean, well, obviously black men. Okay? That has to be the core. And two, black women, you see. We've got to work together in tandem.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? We've got to get out of the position where what I say goes. You see? My name is Haki Madhubuti. Haki means justice. Justice. Madhubuti means precise, accurate, dependable. I'm not a king. I'm not a prince. You know what I'm saying? My wife, you know, I can't tell my wife to go in there and cook. She got a PhD from the University of Chicago. She's a distinguished faculty member at Northwestern. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to waste her in the kitchen. So that means that we got children, then we got to partner up and do what is needed together in this house.
Right.
So essentially, what we need and the core assets are basically black men and black women who are culturally knowledgeable, who understand the importance of work and study and production. When you look at a community that's working, it's a productive community.
Right.
All right. You look at our community. In fact, you walk down 79th Street, where Third World Press is, and one of our schools located. Most of those businesses are not owned by black people.
Right.
And I will say this each and every day. Some of the most revolutionary people in the black community are people who got to meet the payroll every 2 weeks. Quote me on that. Quote me on that.
Because you know,
and maintain our consciousness. Yeah. All right. And so those are the key assets we got to have. We have got to understand the importance of wealth acquisition, but not just wealth acquisition for oneself, but wealth acquisition for the community in which we're involved in, and which we live in. You see?
Right. And many, that's a good segue to the next question, Haki. So many of us know you and Safisha and your family. We know you as a serious family man and father. Right? What accounts for the fact that your family has remained productive and is a model of a strong black family over the years?
Well, as you know, Brother Saquon, I grew up around Pimps and Hoes, Slammin' Cadillac Doors on the west side of Chicago. All right? If you read my memoir, Yellow Black, the first 21 years of a poor's life, I chronicle how my mother was basically in the sex trade. I almost say slave trade. Sex trade. And, you know, she was turned out by black ministers, all right? But by the time she was 34, she was dead. My sister had her first child at 14, second child at 16, third child at 18. By the time she was 27, she had 6 children, 5 different fathers, never married. Her life is ruined. So I come up under, you know, the Marxists say lumping proletariat, all right? Well, I come up in that. And so I realized very early that we need stability. So when I found Safisha back in 1969, and we dated for 6 years, you see, before we married. And the point is that we courted for 6 years. So when we married, we knew each other very well, and we knew that we had to make a commitment for life and make a commitment to build something. So essentially, she had an undergraduate degree. She was working on a master's degree. And then by the time we had our third child, I said, baby, you need to go back and get a PhD. All right. I was already teaching in the academy. I was at Howard at that time. Then I moved to University of Iowa. But the point is, I encouraged her. I mean, we had to encourage each other. And I knew I was, you know, I'm very productive. I was always very productive because I didn't want to go back to where I came from. All right. And I knew at a certain level I had distinguished myself because I had educated myself. That's that's the distinguishing factor. And I knew this, especially going into the black arts movement. You know, being light-skinned and stuff like that, I said, and having a lot of problems with some of these other poets out here, I said, okay, I got this. I know how to solve this problem. I'm going to outwork everybody. That was my secret. I'm going to outwork everybody. And then finding a sister who felt the same way. And that's what Safisha. And so when we talked her back to going back to school, she went back to the University of Chicago to work on a PhD, got a PhD in 3 years, dissertation in hand. She ain't no dummy. My wife is brilliant, all right? And so all I'm saying is that families, we got to encourage each other. So now our children have seen how we have been very productive in our lives. Then they know that we are not selling for anything less from them. And so Bomani, Alani comes out, she goes to Spelman, then ends up at Columbia. Bomani comes out, he goes to Northwestern School of Engineering, now he's a civil engineer. Akiti comes out, he goes to Northwestern Engineering, becomes a computer scientist, all right? So I'm saying that they need examples in their lives. And as you know this, is that you, we, we become cultural fathers, not only to all these children out here that we deal with within the context of our schools.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. See, so we it's not just our biological families. Right. It's our cultural families also. And these kids see us, and they believe us because they see our kids
right.
doing
right.
well.
Right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. You initiated, I mean, yeah, of course I agree with everything you just said. You initiated the Black Male Summit last summer in Chicago with Kennedy King. And what was the objective? Now, I know, but I want folks to hear this because I was part of the planning team. But what was the objective, and what do you see as the next steps?
Well, you know, I see myself primarily as a poet, but I'm a poet who is also an organizer. After Black Men had been published, and, well, even before that, we had started an organization, a national organization with about 10 men. It was just 10 of us, the National Black Holistic Society. And this National Black Holistic Society, we would organize these black health retreats. We did this for 10 years. We had these retreats in upstate New York. As you know, we bring everybody up there. You know, that's when I got to really know Susan Taylor real well. She would come up. In fact, Kepra, her husband, popped a question at our retreat, all right? But my point is we have to organize all the time. And so what I saw in terms of organizing the summit, what we wanted to do was to speak to people who are involved with doing this critical work out here in the black community. Mm-hmm. We have to communicate with each other because it's very easy. It's very easy to get out here and just become, you know, just totally down, you know, just nothing can happen, you know. Well, that's not true. That's not true. But we have to talk to each other. We have to encourage each other. You know, I've been knowing you for a long time, Saquon, and I remember when you were having some difficult times and trying to find your way and boom, boom, boom. You done found your way now, and you're doing beautiful work.
Yeah.
But that beautiful work didn't cannot come out of a vacuum. It came out of working with other people doing stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do with the summit, is that essentially we got to keep our issues out front. And no one knows our issues better than we do, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm tired of these aliens coming in our community trying to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
And that's what the summit was really about.
And I know Susan Taylor actually introduced the National Care Mentoring Program at the summit. I mean, that, and now it's at Harlan High School and it's up and running here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first time we knew. I found out about it was when she wrote it out at the summit. So it was very useful in that.
Yeah, quite useful. I'm on the board, so I remember when Susan, you know, Susan and Kepra and others decided to do this, and she had decided to leave her Essence because of, you know, some problems there, and she had called some of her friends together. Felicia and I were among those, and then she laid the idea out, and so we got behind and said, let's do it.
Yeah.
And she has done a marvelous job.
Yeah, I'm on the planning committee for that as well, because I think it's very, very important work. Well, we got a few minutes left, but I would be remiss because there's an historic event about to take place. The diaries, and I'm going to make sure I got the title right, Haki. The Diaries of Malcolm X, is that
right.
The title?
The Diary of Malcolm X / El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. Right.
And that drops in a few weeks?
It drops on Marcus Garvey's birthday, August 17th.
Well, this is a historic event. So what's your expectations for the book?
Well, our expectations are very high. In fact, we have made some serious changes at Third World Press. Third World Press is the premier black book publishing company in the United States, if not the world. We're going into our 46th year, and we've published several million booksellers. But we see The Diary of Malcolm X, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, edited by Herbert Boyd and Eliyahu Shabazz. Eliyahu Shabazz is the third daughter of Betty Shabazz and Malcolm X. I'm very close to the family. In fact, after Malcolm was assassinated, I kind of pledged to myself that as soon as I become more of an adult, I was just 21, that I'm going to reach out to the family. And I did. I reached out to Betty. We brought her to our retreats and stuff, and we became very good friends.
Right.
And so, as you know, when Manny Marble published his book, we published the book answering his book.
Right, yeah.
So the key point with this book is that Malcolm X, after he left the Nation of Islam, he traveled between the United States and Africa and the Middle East and to Europe. And he kept meticulous notes and diaries. And these diaries had basically been, our family had donated them to the Schomburg Center of Black Culture up in Harlem. So Herb Boyd and Eliyahu went into the diaries and just pulled out what they felt was the protein of the diaries. in about 250-300 pages. I wrote a foreword, and they wrote commentary as well as an epilogue. And it is marvelous. And I can tell you one very important thing that comes out of the diaries, and many of them in there, but he met with NASA, he met with Nkrumah, he met with leaders all over the continent. Malcolm was trying to essentially get the leadership of Africa and the Middle East to come to the United Nations and put our struggle into the United Nations, the human rights struggle of black people in this country. And, of course, he had founded the Organization for African American Unity as well as a Muslim mosque and company. But he just was not able to make it. He was assassinated in 65.
Wow.
But we got those diaries. And so finally what we're doing, I had to make new arrangements with a different kind of distributor. When we publish the diary, it come out in hardback, but also will come out in e-book. And the e-book, the diaries, will be available 24/7, as well as we're going with Book on Demand. And all of Third World Press books from 1967 up to the present will go into e-books as well as books on demand.
It's great.
So the company is moving into a new direction, and hopefully not only the diary but all the books that we've published from The Destruction of Black Civilization to John Henry Clark's books to Asa Hillier's books to Gwendolyn Brooks' books. I mean, we got it. You know, we got a catalog.
Right, right.
And so hopefully within 6 months, 7 months, a year, we'll be out of debt, put it that way.
Yeah, so but there are two historic events. So this is really interesting from the standpoint of history. One, the book, right, itself is a historic event.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the change in the organizational structure of the press. Right?
Oh, yeah, we had to change.
Yeah.
And as you know, and your wife, your beautiful wife, Rafael, she knows this too.
Mm-hmm.
We all had to change. You know, I had to change the whole everything. I mean, in terms of '08 and '09 almost wiped us out in terms of the big recession, which was for us a depression. And we're still recovering, you see.
Kirk, did you have a question for Haki before we...
Dr. Madhubuti, I had a question just because, you know, we're seeing... I just wondered if maybe if you could give us a little maybe political commentary because we're seeing a lot of changes, quote-unquote, alleged changes in America. We have an African-American president. You know, we're seeing this advance of some sectors of our community and being quite successful. But yet we seem to, many of us, a great majority of us, still kind of find the challenges in education and employment and all these things that you mentioned earlier. What do you think are some of the strategic things that we need to do as a community, as a black people, to kind of ensure that this distribution of opportunity really manifests itself in the way that America is supposed to provide opportunity, which has always been the forgotten promise? Do you have any thoughts about strategic initiative or approach that we might adopt to really move us beyond where we are today?
Well, give them the 2-minute version, Haki.
Okay, I think that one thing that we need to have a national petition directed toward the president to begin to use executive orders in terms of working for the betterment of black people. He has not spoken out in terms of our issues at a serious level other than trying to tell us what to do, you see. I'm saying that what I mean is that executive order stating, say, for instance, who in their right mind would allow 50 schools to be closed up in their community? It's not affecting Latinos. It's not affecting white people. It's affecting us, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be rough in the fall, all right? Number two, I think that we have to really begin to push the whole question of integrity. Integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And within the context of integrity is that we have to be put back on the table. There are people in our community who betrayed us.
Mm-hmm.
They betrayed us.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and I can speak really about that in terms of what's happening out there at Chicago State. That we would not have allowed that to happen if it was a white institution. It would not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so this whole question of integrity, the whole question of holding the president accountable, we all worked for him. So I'm saying that. So it's not we against him, but he has got to come out forthwith and say, "I'm for the development the serious development of the black community. And this is how it can happen. Boom, boom, boom. All right? He can talk to you. He can talk to Saquon. He can talk to me. All right? And finally, he needs a damn historian and a poet in his cabinet.
You want that job?
I'll take it, yeah. Because I won't bite my mouth. That's, I mean, you know, I won't bite my tongue,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Hakeem, for taking the time.
Yeah, encourage you brothers to stay strong, okay? Keep on going, you know.
Thank you,
Dr. Mahmoud. You're doing a great job.
Right,
thank you.
Thank you. Well, so we want to thank Hakeem again. And as we wind down, this is our last show for the year, as we said. And we want to thank our guests again, all of those who've come and joined us over the last 9 weeks, 10 weeks, and lift up some of the highlights from the New Man Project over the last 10 weeks. But first, I want to thank Bill Laurie, assistant to the president at Chicago Community Trust, Terry Mazzania, Dr. Marlana Karinga, founder and chair of US Organization and creator of Kwanzaa, Susan Taylor, founder, National Cares Mentoring Movement, and editor-in-chief, emeritus of Essence Magazine, Helen Mitchell, director of strategic planning and policy development for the Honorable Congressman Danny Davis, Karen Norton Reeves, CEO of Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, Dr. Joe West, project director of the North Lawndale Smoking Cessation Program, which is a community-based intervention at Sinai Urban Health Institute, Dr. Angela Odom, assistant professor, Department of Kinesiology and Nutrition at University of Illinois at Chicago, Joe Jones, executive director of the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore, Kenny Braswell, executive director for the National Clearinghouse for Responsible Fatherhood in D.C., Leslie Gordon, PR guru and co-author of Dare to Be Extraordinary, a collection of positive life lessons from African-American fathers, Phil Thomas, president and CEO of ETA Theater, and Haki R. Matabudi, founder and president of Third World Press, and of course our fathers, Donald McGee and John Williams, who joined us on an earlier show. And FFSC, as I've said before, is excited to be working with WVON. This is their 50th anniversary, and to be part of a national discussion on the issues and challenges of our time. And one more time, our phone number, for those of you who want more information, is 312-252-0460, extension 120, 252-0460, extension 120, and our website is www.ffhc.org. This has been great, Kirk. Highlights?
Sir.
We got about a minute left.
Highlights? Well, let me just end the way you always start the show, which is talking about the assets within our community, which we have many, which include our fathers, our women, our children, and these are really important assets. And I think to the extent that we focus on these assets, we realize that when we talk negative, we distract ourselves from the possibility and actually leveraging the internal capacity that we actually have. And I always appreciated the fact that you started the shows this way. And I think one of the things that the show has shown is that we have a huge amount of resource and expertise in our communities. We just need to reach out and touch it. I mean, we've talked everything from the history of the community to philanthropy to culture and the rites of passage and the power of women and the public policy and understanding workforce development and talking about health and nutrition, talking about national issues and local issues around responsible fatherhood. So we need to bring all of these resources, invest them into the community in ways that the community be informed and think about the strategic opportunities that we have to improve where we are today. So I think my summary for where we've been is that it's all about assets and focusing on assets.
Right. And also, we'd be remiss if we didn't thank Dr. Harvey, your mother, and Teresa Rafar-Prim, my wife, who is getting better. She's been a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, we're sending prayers out for her. We know she's going to get better.
Yeah, well, she's getting better. I'm getting ready to go and pick her up from the hospital. She's ready to come home. We also want to thank them, though, right, because they did a great job on Mother's Day.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Good job. Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. Was that Mother's Day? I'm losing track of it.
That was Mother's Day.
That's
exactly
right.
The Mother's Day show.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
That's right.
So I want to thank you.
You've been tremendous, brother. Yeah. You've been tremendous. And, you know, we've worked together for a long time, and we'll continue to work together with FFHC, and we've got more work to do. And you model the kind of energy we have to maintain in order to get it done. So I'm on your team, brother.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And, of course, we want to thank our fathers, right, because if it's not
– Absolutely.
If they're not engaged in this – and so I want to again thank – and we want to thank Troy – Harden. I know we said a lot of thank yous to go out, but it's just so many people engaged in this project and doing that peer-to-peer work, which I've argued is the most important work, men together, coming together, dealing with the issues that confront us, our challenges, and lifting up our assets and supporting each other is the way forward. So
it takes a team. It takes a team, brother. We can't do it by ourselves, and we gotta leverage those, like we said, those assets that we have around us, and that's how things change.
Right. And so this is our last show. And so until the next forum, everybody, take care.
All right, take care. Peace.